tell you guys, it is good to finally have a stable living situation. I have.
Is this a bit?
Hey, Lev, we're going to bring you on in a little bit. So if you could just go right back outside.
Okay, I'll go.
Thank you.
Man, that guy's like really a type A. Wow. You're holding the sign. It said, please don't talk yet.
And yeah. I made us all t-shirts that says there's a blank space for the guest's name with a white, like a whiteboard tape. And it says blank, please don't talk yet.
How dare you take credit for my t-shirts?
Okay.
You asked me to create t-shirts that would shut up our guests, and I did so. They were birthed from my mind, Grant. Just because you pitched the idea to me doesn't make them yours.
All right, I'm sorry. Momentary lapse of judgment. They are completely and utterly owned by Leopold Bordeaux. They're his IP.
Who else puts whiteboard on a shirt? You tell me.
I think Anna Wintour of Vogue did it once, but...
You shut your mouth.
Oh, I forgot. You used to work for her.
I worked with her.
Oh, God. This
Look,
again.
Look, Grant, the problem would be solved if we just stopped starting these podcasts in media res, you know? if we said, you know, hey, we're going to start the podcast, then maybe... I'm sorry I came in so hot today. I'm usually not this confrontational, but... My God, you rubbed me the wrong way right out the gate.
I'm sorry. Here, let's officially kick it off. The cast has gone home. The crew's in control. Welcome to Cruise Control, the only podcast where we dive deep behind the camera to hopefully get rich and famous, and in the meantime, show the world behind the scenes and what really happens at JAMP Productions. Along with me are my two trusty co-hosts. Now, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Dorsch here. I do the stunts. I do other things that involve explosions. And sometimes I do animation.
Ooh.
Sexual animation.
Oh.
Right. I guess when you say animation, you kind of imply that you're the one drawing it, not the motion capture guy.
Yeah. Have you picked up drawing?
No. It's more of a loose use of the word animation.
Understood, Dorsch.
Yeah, just pretty loose.
But I've seen your sketchbook, and it's not bad, Dorsch.
No.
Oh, that's not animation. That's my moving drawing stuff.
Like a flipbook, yeah. It's
no,
not
that's
bad,
not
Dorsch.
The flipbook. Over here. This is my flipbook.
For listeners, Dorsch just picked up the Britannica Encyclopedia and threw it in the air.
In what can only be described as Ukrainian humor.
unknowable for anyone who's not Ukrainian. So,
okay, Leo, you introduce yourself.
Yeah, sorry. My name is Leopold Bordeaux. I am in charge of costumes and wardrobe here at JAMP Productions. I'm the inventor of the whiteboard t-shirt. I don't care what anybody else says. And I'm sorry. Again, I'm sorry I came in so hot. I've had a rough week is all.
It's okay.
What happened, Leo?
Look, are you guys familiar with the series of unfortunate events television show?
The one on Netflix starring
CSI Miami?
Yes, the Netflix show.
Oh.
Not CSI Miami.
Not CSI Miami.
There are lots of unfortunate events on that, though, just to be clear.
I would agree that is a series of unfortunate
I would say
events.
Murder typically is an unfortunate event, though.
Yeah,
sometimes
I know.
It works out.
But I believe Leo is talking about the titular series of unfortunate events.
Yes, I guess it's not a direct parallel, but I was bitten hard by a baby. And My hand hasn't quite recovered the way I hoped it would.
Those instruments.
That thing is swollen.
Exactly.
It looks like a boxing glove.
Dorsch, I'm aware. And yes, Grant, I am aware that these are my instruments. These are my tools with which I sustain myself and create and express my art. And so to be sort of out of commission and to watch these my interns fumble around with my precious fabrics is frankly painful.
So
it's more painful than the hand.
Is that why my whiteboard shirt has this giant hole in the back? I thought that it was like a style thing, but it's just no.
Well, the interns, they love their cigars, and so they keep ashing on these shirts with this hot ash that burns through the fabric a little bit. So I don't care for these interns. I will say that I was not involved.
They are your nephews, right?
Not anymore.
What happened to your sister?
You can do that here too.
I had my relationship with her legally dissolved.
Oh man, I would never do that with Sarah.
Yes, I know Sarah well, and she speaks very highly of you.
She's the only one.
I can confirm that as well.
Is there a lot of paperwork to get rid of your nephews?
Yeah, what's that like?
Well, the paperwork is more about getting rid of the sister, because what I learned was your sister is really the connection between you and your nephews. If your sister stops being your sister, then those people stop being your nephews. And again, I learned this while I was trying to legally dissolve my relationship with my nephews, and they said that's going to be twice as much paperwork because there's two of them. And so I figured, why not, you know, cut the problem out at the root instead of at the bud?
Now, how does your oil tycoon business daddy from Dubai, how is he taking this?
Just for the listeners, yes, my father does technically classify as a business daddy. That's what his business cards say when he...
reading right off into
Japanese
card.
Prostitutes, but he is not so happy with my decision, mostly because I think that my sister followed in his footsteps more traditionally than I did, and so part of the reason that I was excited about hiring my nephews being hired, I didn't hire them, but
that was a pure coincidence.
Yes, I was very optimistic because they lucked out. They had very solid resumes, and I was excited about their interest in film and in art because I thought, you know, maybe they will have thrown off the yoke of oil tycoonery and join me in a realm of elevated artistic thinking. And turns out they just wanted to smoke cigars in a dusty warehouse.
Well, I've been saying it for years. You can do that anywhere.
Well, specifically, you can. There are areas where you can't smoke, Grant.
Also, you bring that up a lot. Like, you really talk about that a lot. Every restaurant, we could be smoking.
You really only started talking about it when you quit smoking. So,
that 1 week of my life when I was an avid smoker was rough. All right. Quitting was the hardest thing I've probably ever done.
And as a reminder to the listeners, a few episodes ago, you achieved nuclear fusion.
Yes. When I made the practical sun. Oh God, what project was that one for?
It was a mechanical sun, I think.
In any event, you
still practical.
You rank that below quitting smoking in terms of the hardest things you've ever done.
Have you ever been addicted to something so much so that you blacked out a considerable chunk of your life? I lost a week.
Take one look at me and ask if I have trouble with addiction. Look at all my scarves and you tell me whether I've had substance issues.
I'm sorry. You're right. That was very out of place. And, you know, Dorsch, you're still, I know you came into work today wearing your AA is cool shirt.
Still is. I also recently, I've been seeing it so much in the mirror, I wear this a lot, that I got into actually AA batteries too. Surprisingly, they fit a lot of needs. And I'm happy that this shirt has more than one meaning now.
Dorsch, I'm going to go out on a limb. And I'm curious, what do you use these batteries for?
Mainly book lights, to be honest. When I'm flipping books, you don't want to flip in the dark.
That's
so,
a pretty bulky book light.
Yeah, I mean,
it clips on with a AA in there.
Yeah, it's about 5.5 pounds, 6x5x6.
Okay, that
pound.
Wait, what?
It's cubic poundage.
Dorsch, I think you're going into your European metrics again.
Oh yeah, you know what? This yeah, you want the American system?
I'd love to know.
Yeah, it's about 3 inches.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You did say mainly for book lights. What else are you doing with these batteries?
Well, before this, I had a pretty weird fetish where I'd put baby carrots in all the remote controls in houses. So I'm really kind of paying that back.
That why you were munching on a bag of refrigerator cold AA's?
Yeah, it's just been so confusing lately, to be honest.
Well, hang on, Dorsch.
What? On. What?
So, a fetish is typically something that someone from which someone derives sexual pleasure. So, when you describe this fetish of breaking into houses and putting carrots in these
baby carrots, remotes,
I'm sorry, I didn't clarify that.
Please, Leo, regular carrots would be ridiculous.
It would never fit. It's why it's so good.
So you've been putting baby carrots into these remotes. And does this get you off, or is this, are we using fetish correctly? Because I don't follow.
Yes.
Again, I'm not a sexual being. I don't understand, but.
No, it's very sexually charged, to be honest. Yes.
So do you then go home and masturbate afterwards, or are you breaking into people's houses and masturbating and then also kind of pranking them? Because to me, I think I would lead with the breaking into someone's home and masturbating within,
so,
and then maybe mention the carrot thing.
So
afterwards.
You think that it would be the risk and fear of getting caught, but honestly, the idea of someone having a very minor inconvenience really just gets me going. And honestly, I get home, I tell my new girlfriend about it, and we just make passionate love for hours over
well,
it.
Well, what happened to your old girlfriend?
She's not into baby carts and batteries anymore, so you got to change, roll with the times, you know?
Dorsch, I don't want to accuse you of anything here, but I found a yogurt cup in my Keurig the other day, a small yogurt cup.
God, someone left their phone down here again.
Oh, Christ. Right in the middle of my accusation. But that couldn't have been you, right? Your only sexual inconvenience.
So that's not me. It's a good idea. What I've been doing for Keurig K-Cup type things, I take the Domino's. You ever get the garlic dipping sauce?
Yes, yes.
I've been swapping those out. Yeah, you get a nice garlic coffee in the morning. Oh, oh. Oh,
just hot water filtered through Domino's garlic oil.
Now, have you ever had the McDonald's Szechuan coffee in the morning?
Oh,
I have not.
It's similar to what Dorsch is doing. You take the Szechuan sauce from McDonald's and you put that in coffee.
That is honestly, Grant, that's just disgusting. You're an idiot.
I was going to do it one time, but Justin Roiland wouldn't stop screaming at me.
Oh, yeah, he is a
He was
a character.
So mean about it. I was surprised. He seems like a jovial guy.
Okay, you guys obviously already know who our guest is. And surprise, listeners, we have a guest who blatantly broke the podcast rules about 15 minutes ago. But let's introduce him shortly, because before that, we should probably say, what a project Jamp is working on.
It's a historical, for sure.
It is, as long as I've been here, it's the first of his genre. I mean, you see these at the Oscars during the breaks when they're honoring deceased comedians and actors. You know, they brought comedians to the Oscars now.
I'm aware.
I'm not as amused as you, to be honest.
I think the thing that I find most interesting about this project, and again, we'll bring our guest in a minute, but the thing I find most interesting is the fact that instead of typically something like this, you'd have sort of a compilation of the highlights, like a clip of a famous comedy or something. It's typically not a narrative film like this. So that's one thing I'm very excited about. And again, we'll introduce our guest shortly.
Well, the good news, he doesn't look very anxious to get in here. He looks quite relaxed.
No, he is slumped up against the door, clearly with his ear pressed to the...
Smoking, drinking.
Yeah, he's smoking a fat cigar, drinking a fat glass of what I can only assume to be straight Grey Goose. But here with us today is Lev Stevenson from A Tribute to the Golden Age of Comedy.
Thank
Lev,
you
why don't you? Me. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I got a little ahead of myself here. But it's so good to be here. And I just want to thank you all so much for letting me be here. You don't get pleasures like this. We were talking about, I listened earlier, we were talking about fetishes and stuff. You know, and I have to say that one of the greatest pleasures of my life is getting an introduction as good as the one that you just gave me. So I just want to say that. Continue with your spiel or whatever you were doing.
Mr. Stevenson, you again, just because I'm very confused as to whether people are using this word fetish correctly or not, did you just derive a sexual thrill from our introduction? Often happens to men like you or yourself specifically?
Absolutely not, because I get too much guilt about it. So yes, to get sexual pleasure from something like that is just, it's too much guilt. I mean, I get, the greatest pleasure I get is seeing someone smile. And when I see that, that is, it's beyond sexual. You know, have you ever seen that it's like a divine pleasure? You know, it's better than any orgasm that you could have or could dream of having.
Huh. Now, I went up to the call sheet on the billboard last night, and I saw the title, A Tribute to the Golden Age of Comedy, and your name was first billing, but there was no description of what you were doing with the project. Do you mind? How are you involved with this?
So, I like to say there's a term in a certain industry called the fluffer, which is when someone is off the screen, they're still pleased, you know. So I like to call myself the comedy fluffer, because what I do is when you do comedy from 9 to 5, sometimes 8 to 6, maybe 7 to 7, 6 to 8, something like that.
12-hour. That's a long day.
It's a very long day, and you can't do comedy for that long. You can't be funny for that long. So what I do is when they come off of the stage or off of the set, off of the camera, wherever they do, out of frame, I entertain them. I tell them jokes, and I specialize in book puns. And so my role in this is that I have been in this industry for a long time. I originally worked with the Three Stooges.
You were known as the fourth Stooge for.
I was the fourth Stooge. Although I was never listed. This is actually the first time I've ever been in the credits.
So, who was your favorite Stooge to fluff?
Shemp.
I was going to say you look like a Shemp man. A Shemp or a Curly Joe would have been my guess.
Would they have any type of special reaction when you finished like a fluff with them?
They would. The great thing about Shemp was that on camera, he always did a hee-bee-bee-bee-bee-bee. That was Shemp sing on camera. But when he was off camera, his laugh was a very like full body chuckle, just a ha ha ha. Like kind of, we call him Shempy Claus when he was. Shemp was my favorite. He was the best one in the fluff.
So for you, like when they finish, laughter is essentially the semen of your.
I don't want to get too sexual with it. Shemp and I had a very close but non-intimate relationship. And there were a lot of tell-alls that came out about that. And, I've worked in porn, and it's just not the same.
So were you trying to, you were making them laugh too in between scenes?
Well, because the dialogue is so awful that you can't help but laugh at it, right? And if you're ramming your schlong into some, into some dame, for 12 hours, a 7-to-7 shift.
That's a long shoot for even for a pornography film.
That's what I said. I'm sitting there, I'm going through Cuban cigars because this was the 60s when you could still get them legally. I'm going through packs and packs and packs. And, I'm watching this go on. I say, how long can they do? When I'm with my wife, I thought that was a long time because I can't get an erection. So, but this was about three hours.
As another man who cannot get an erection, I admire your work. I feel that. Hang on, were you doing pornography at the same time as doing the Three Stooges?
No.
The Three Splooges wasn't.
That wasn't you.
That was not me. No, that was a different project. That was Shemp's son, Stickler. That was his project. Stickler Stooge. That was his name.
I was more of a Meaty Python guy growing up.
Yeah, I worked on that set. I tell you what, John Ass. John Ass was the best actor I worked with.
I was always an erect idol guy.
Both good. Everyone has their own personal taste. I'm sorry, I just bit so hard into the cigar. I think a little something came out of it. I think it's tobacco.
Oh, that's fine.
As good a guess as any.
Yes.
But you started in film and then went into pornography and
we're really clinging to this pornography thing, and I wish we could talk about my other work. For example, you could ask me how did I meet Shemp, and I've got a great story about that.
I would love to hear that. I'm just trying to figure out the timeline as to where your projects fell.
We know it was the 60s.
It was 1935.
Okay.
And then Shemp, that's when I started. Yeah, that's when I started. And then Shemp died in 1954, and then they used stock footage of Shemp up until 1963, and that's when I started to do pornography.
Excellent. So how did you meet Shemp?
So Shemp and I, I forget your name, the Ukrainian, Eastern European.
Dorsh.
Dorsh, right, yeah. We were both at the same barber shop, and he said, "Hey, your haircut looks like shit." I said, "Yours does too." And we were friends after that. And he said, "Hey, do you want to go down to the library?" And I said, "Library? I hardly know her." And he laughed so hard at that joke. Because that was really popular back in the old days, the "I hardly know her" jokes.
But was Brary a common name at the time?
No, it was not. It was just kind of funny to put it at the end, you know, because it was post Kennedy assassination. Oh, wait, sorry, no, this was pre Kennedy assassination.
That was a pivotal time in your life.
Absolutely.
Kennedy assassination.
I have two periods
PK,
in my life.
PK.
Pre and post.
Pre-K was tough.
Pre-K?
Yeah.
Post-K.
Yeah. Because I was in the car in front of him. Fun fact.
What? Remind me, what project was that one for?
That was for, we were filming a movie called Kennedy in Dallas. Don't lose your head. That, you know, that was decided before everything happened.
That film never was produced, though, right?
It wasn't. But Zapruder went on to, he was a fabulous director later on. He directed Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind. And then, of course, Rocky IV.
That's a good movie. That's a really good movie.
That's a great movie. I'm sure you liked it.
Really good.
Yeah.
Were you supposed to be on the road that day, though, or were you just caught in traffic?
No, I was supposed to be there. I was Lady Bird's, I was Lady Kennedy's fluffer for the day.
Oh, we'll get to your part in Lady Bird later.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
Excuse me. I was just wondering if you knew any details regarding why the route was changed. As you were in the car, or where, you know, shots might have come from, any details that the public might like to know about the Kennedy assassination?
So I really hate to say this, but the route change was my fault. I had this great bit where I would say it was the dirty bit. I shouldn't even have thought of it. But we were planning to go by, we were originally going to go by Beautiful Fountain. And I said, what the hell can you do with a fountain? You can't make any jokes about a fountain. But then the name Grassy Knoll. Mwah. I mean, it's a golden opportunity. I don't even have to tell you what kind of jokes you can make. So I leaned over to the driver. I said, take us by the Grassy Knoll. I'll make a joke they'll never forget. And we went by the Grassy Knoll, and John F. Kennedy got shot. And so I can't tell
you. There's also in the Zapruder film, you can see you gesturing for those FBI or the federal agents on the back of the car to get out of the shot.
Yeah, because that was going to be my moment on screen. That was going to be my moment. I said, we're going to do this Grassy Knoll bit. Because then I'm going to be in this movie. I'm going to be in the picture. And then Harvey Oswald or whoever shot him and ruined my chance in the pictures. So I'm top billing now because, you know, the CIA investigation has been given up or the FBI investigation has been given up and all that.
Oh, so your lack of billing in the past has been directly because of the CIA investigation?
That
hasn't been like work related.
It's that, and I get no respect in this town.
Okay.
You know, I try a lot. I've tried a lot of different gimmicks to try and get respect. I wore suits that were all white. I wore suits that were, you can't believe the kind of suits I've worn.
Well, you're wearing one right now without sleeves or anything below the knees. So.
I call it the tank suit. Rather than a tank top, it's a tank suit. I'm a funny guy, but I do book puns. Book puns are what I'm known for. John Wayne loved my book puns. Shemp loved my book puns. I'm known for.
I don't know what a book pun is. Maybe it's a cultural thing. I would love to hear a book pun.
Okay, let's see here.
Do we provide a book to you?
Would it be helpful if we set the context of the scene you were fluffing us for? You know, does the book pun change based on the content of what's going on screen? Or
sometimes, sometimes I can start you out with my best one. We're kind of the Lev's greatest hit. You know?
Oh, please,
singular.
Well, yeah, but it's the one I always start with, and people love it. People absolutely adore this one. So Count Leo Tolstoy is in the red light district. And he's walking around, and the lady of the night comes up to him, and she offers him her services, if you get what I mean. And him being a count, and he's married, he's got 5 children. He says, no, I can't accept your services, but I won't call the police, so you can go whore in peace. That's the pun. That's the book pun. Whore in peace rather than war in peace. That's
So do all of these book puns have lengthy setup to them? Or
typically, yes.
Perfect. Well, I've never heard a book pun before. Is it this? Do you normally tell these over a drink, or what? I can't imagine anywhere where someone would tell that.
Well, if it's been a long day on set, you typically find them on sets. And I started it. No one will tell you that I started it, but I started it. And so while, you know, the best boy or best girl is standing out there getting the shot all lined up, you're sitting there with, you know, Dick Tracy and the rest of the gang, Mr. Magoo, and you're telling them book puns.
So I've got a question about a tribute to the golden age of comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is the golden age of comedy?
It's a precious period, because right now comedy is so oversaturated. You got everyone and their dog, grandmother, mother, niece, nephew, all types of relations.
Don't say nephew.
I'm sorry. I heard that. I apologize.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
They're all doing.
Just the cigar is triggering.
I can put the cigar down. I can put.
No. I'm just on edge. Is all.
Right.
Had a rough day. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We all have rough days.
Hey, baby carrot.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's an Energizer battery you just bit into.
Shit.
Well, it's a good thing my teeth are fake. I've prepared for just such an eventuality. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. I was trying to come up with a joke, but I lost interest. So there's what the hell was I talking about? Oh, what was the golden age of comedy? So comedy these days is so oversaturated that you know, there was a certain period when only rich, wealthy people could be in comedy. And that was during the Great Depression. So that was 1929 to 1939. And so I would say that was the golden age. You had the Three Stooges, who were all multimillionaires with their own private golf courses. You had the great
Chaplin. We had
Charles Chaplin. That's right. You had W.C. Fields. You had Mae West.
Lordy Bupkis.
Lordy Bupkis. You had Woodrow Allen, who was Woody Allen's father, who was not. There are no allegations. I want to say that Woodrow Allen is a legitimate good man. Woody Allen, awful guy. But Woodrow Allen, great man. I don't want to poo-poo the current days. I would also say the golden age of comedy is maybe the first 6 months of 2010. I'd say those are the two. So there are two volumes of this film. The first is 1929, 1939. And the second is the first 6 months of 2010.
And the second one is 3 times as long as the first half. Is that our first segment?
Absolutely. Right? Because the internet is so deep, is so wide that the film starts and there's a beautiful part where Natalie Portman plays the cheeseburger cat. And it's not animated. And that's the beginning of the film. So we start there and we end with a James Corden's Ascendancy to Power.
Just to be clear, you're talking about the Iken has cheeseburger cat meme?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I hate to interrupt, but the hardest part of this week was with one busted hand trying to sew up all of those robes needed for the James Corden attendance ceremony. I don't know how to make robes that fit shape. You know what? I'm going to try that again. I don't know how to make a robe that is a perfect sphere.
For James Corden?
Well, for John Goodman, who's playing James Corden.
That's right. They couldn't get James Corden.
So they got a good actor.
Yeah, John Goodman.
James Corden, if you're listening, hit us up.
I was going to mention how we've recently talked about John Goodman in 11 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes, no, I was about to say Tom Cruise is going to remake this film shortly thereafter in a fat suit.
Yes.
You know, I actually worked with James Corden and Jason Derulo in the film Cats. It's funny that we're talking about Cats. I actually worked on Cats.
Oh.
You book pun fluffed on Cats?
I did. And, you know, Jason Derulo came up to me, you know, and his humahama, you know, was kind of hanging out there. And I said, Jason, whoa, I could come on. You know, if I wanted a salami, I'd go to the deli. He laughed a lot at that.
Do you remember any of your puns from Cats? Any of the puns you used? It might be helpful if
there must have been a lot of cat puns.
There's definitely a lot of cat puns. You know, getting old, you kind of forget some of them. But I'll see if I can recollect. What's a book with a cat in it?
The Cat in the Hat.
Cat in the Hat. Yeah.
There's
the screenplay to Cats.
Or isn't it based on a book of the T.S. Eliot book about cat poetry or whatever?
Yeah.
The T.S. Eliot book of poems about cats that people...
Yeah, I think it's titled something like Jellicle Cats.
Sure.
So this this kind of reminds me of one of the jokes that I did that's based on Jellicle Cats. hold on one second while I piece it together in my mind, because the setup is so important. You don't want to say... any words that end up in the end of it in the eventual joke.
Of course not. Of course.
So,
no. If it helps, we can not to stall, but it almost seems as if coming in as a joke, as a specifically a book pun writer, is a difficult task to do on a film set, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, so if you'd like to keep your craft a secret, feel free, but
we'd
love to hear sort of what you do and help put that out into the ether.
I mean, I'm sharing the joke is not sharing the craft, because the joke itself is the production, you know, but I'm definitely not going to reveal, I used to work as a magician, but... I always told people how I did all my tricks as I was doing them. So believe me, I know. So T.S. Eliot is walking down the street.
Oh, I just coughed up an ace of spades.
Oh, well, see, I won't tell you how I did that one. T.S. Eliot's in his backyard at a July 4th picnic. This is the joke based on Jellicle Cats.
Which we have no idea if that's the title of the book.
And it's something about Jellicle Cats, right? So T.S. Eliot is in his backyard. He's at a picnic. And his wife comes out with dessert. You know, they just had hot dogs and, you know, all that.
Classic barbecue food. Classic hot dogs and all that.
Hot dogs, hamburgers, bratwurst, sauerkraut, pickled dishes.
Maybe a salad of some kind.
Watermelon?
Yeah. A watermelon, of course. Yeah, it's a classic.
You got fresh squeezed lemonade.
Yeah, you got that. You also got
iced tea.
Mint tea. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so the point is T.S. Eliot is in the backyard and his wife comes out with all the desserts. And people are going crazy, but his wife has made too little of the desserts. So he says, look, honey. If we're going to give out the dessert, we're going to need Jell-O to cats. Jello tickets. Jello ticket. Jello tickets. So I said that joke, and I mean, James Corden is rolling on the floor, and Julie Andrews is laughing her ass off.
They seem like they would like that sort of thing.
Absolutely. But you know what's beautiful is that it's like Laffy Taffy. The longer the stretch, the better it is.
You can say that about a lot of things. It's not just Laffy Taffy. Rubber bands.
I'm pretty sure it's just Laffy Taffy. Why would you want a rubber band to stretch out too long?
Yeah, because then it loses elasticity and you can't wrap it as tight. You have to double wrap it around things.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, all right. Thanks for shooting that one down.
I was really shocked about the second part of the movie.
What the hell are you talking about?
About
am I right or am I right?
We often never know.
What second part of a movie are you talking about? The
later years of comedy?
The Golden Age 2.
The second part.
The second half
of 2010.
I thought I was the only person in the world that revered grown-ups as such a spectacular comedy. And the 40 minutes that you dedicated to it was... I felt so aligned with this film.
I'm so happy you enjoyed that. That is the one part of the film that I actually had directorial control over. And so I'm really glad you enjoyed that part. Where we just aired 40 minutes of uncut grown-ups footage rather than actually having any kind. I mean, it's just when we filmed it on an iPhone, and just threw it up on the screen. I'm really glad you enjoyed that part.
Now, Love. 2010 was a great year for movies, and I know you played a large part in the creation of Shrek Forever After.
Yeah, I did. I worked in the recording studio in the VO booth.
Yeah, do you have any stories from the booth, from Mike Myers or Eddie Murphy or any? Any Shrek? I know people love Shrek.
People love Shrek. I never got it. I never got why people love Shrek. But people love Shrek. I think the best story maybe I have is when we were recording the VO for Puss in Boots. And I tried to make a joke for it and I couldn't.
Well, here's your redemption arc.
For Puss in Boots?
Why don't you come up with a killer joke for Puss in Boots? And then tell us stories from us.
Right, exactly. I'll tell you the stories first, and then I'll get to my joke. The definitely rewarding climax of this entire tale will be my story about my joke about Puss in Boots. Eddie Murphy is a great guy. I will say one thing about Michael Myers, though, is that he's a complete dickhead. I mean, he's nothing like he is in Austin Powers, or Shrek, or Wayne's World. I mean, if you think about all three of those characters combined, you have Michael Myers the man. So you have a sexually charged 18-year-old ogre. And that's Michael Myers the man.
How was he sexually charged in your experience in the booth?
What's interesting about what they can do in VO is that they can cut out so much of what you say so seamlessly. So what you don't hear is the lines between the lines.
Wait,
so
you can edit this, Grant?
You can.
I can. If you want to say something right now that I promise will not be in the final cut, go for it.
Well, I mean, I'd like what piss. I said for piss.
You like piss.
Yes, I like piss. This is a deep admission, but
this will never air.
Leo, we can still hear this though.
Yes, I know. I just want to admit something so that I can, you know, finally get it off my chest and start on my road to recovery. But, when I sold all my furniture and got rid of all my furniture, I also accidentally got rid of my toilet. I didn't intend to, but I've been storing In my cups, I have a bunch of cups in my house, and I've been storing urine in there because I have no other way to get rid of it. And I've been saving it all around my loft, and I think that I'm starting to like the aroma. Maybe it's a Stockholm Syndrome kind of thing, but I find it soothing, and it helps me sleep. So
I feel like you could use piss jars as like a luminescent lamp. If you had a beam of light going through it, that it might be pretty, Leo.
It depends on how hydrated he is, I guess.
Look, I'm in it for the aroma. I don't want to be reminded that I live in a piss nightmare.
Well, you never will be, because I assure you, no one will ever hear that.
As soon as there's a way to get a piss-scented candle, I will get rid of all my piss cups because I'd like to go back to sleep.
So yeah, they can edit all that out. That's the beautiful thing about it.
All right. I mean, I think if I were coming up with jokes, I'd say that was a decent amount of time to come up with a killer Puss in Boots.
Yeah.
Joke. So Lev,
do you need a book title as well? Is this going to be a book joke?
No, Puss in Boots is a book title, but I figured at the end of this you could give me a book title and then I could come up with a couple jokes based on it.
Okay.
Because I'm very good. I know a lot about books, so we could do like 100. I have this fun game called 185 or My Sex Is Like, something like that. I'd be very happy to do.
Well, those are classic improv line games.
Absolutely. I love improv and I love book knowledge. But anyway, so for Puss in Boots, so Anonymous, because Anonymous wrote the book, Anonymous is walking down the street and he goes to the Kentucky Downs and he looks at the board on the Kentucky Downs thing and he sees it's all fart jokes. He sees it's, you got farts, you got butts, you got, diarrhea, you got all this stuff. And so he looks to see who has the best odds because he's trying to think, I've lost a lot of money in the past. I don't want to lose money again. So he looks at it. Broker comes up to him. He says, hey, what do you want to put? He says, $5. And he's a little drunk, so he's slurring his words. He says, $5 puts on toots. Put on toots. Puss in Boots.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
And that helped Mike Myers achieve the transcendent performance he delivers in Shrek Forever After in 2010 in the Golden Age. And will we see that scene on screen?
Well, so we won't, but you'll actually hear my voice. Oh, sorry. Yes, in the Golden Age, yes. But in Shrek Forever After, you can actually hear my voice in it. I forgot to tell you this. Because Mike Myers, when he would pass out in the booth from physical exhaustion, they would have me come in and like do the words that they missed. So you could hear. So
I think we actually have a clip. You sent us in a clip.
Yeah, I sent you in a clip. So here's the clip. Donkey, we're gonna go out to the fields, maybe, have a see where the princess is, and then we're gonna go to the castle. And that's my brilliant performance in Shrek.
Now that was both Mike Myers and your voice.
And me,
there,
but
right?
You can't tell the difference. It's a not chameleon performance.
That was flawless. Really flawless.
Thank you.
Now, I think, I don't know if you meant to send in these other clips, but we also have one from Austin Powers and Wayne's World.
Yeah, I also worked on those movies. Austin Powers, Mike Myers, because it wasn't VO. So I had to dress up in the whole getup, and they would cut between, they would do like these mini cuts. So anytime that Austin Powers looks like me, that's me and not Mike Myers. I was on Halloween because I thought I was working for Mike Myers and I was substituting for Michael Myers.
So it's pretty regular for Mike just to pass out on all of these sets, just physically exhausted.
Absolutely. That's what I'll say about him, is he puts 110% into his work. And it just means he can work about 35 minutes continuously without passing out. But I respect that man to no end.
You must know him very well, like, to work that closely with him.
I do. Our children went to school together. We hang out and we feed pigeons together on Saturday mornings.
How much of, would you say, percentage-wise, is that you in the Love Guru?
Arguably the death of Mike Myers' acting career.
95%.
That's what I thought. I knew it was going to be very high.
It was very high. And I said, Mike, but the thing is, I was originally only in about 2% of the film. And if you'll notice the part where Mike Myers' character is, it slowed down by about 75%. That's because they stretched my 2 minutes into an entire hour and a half movie.
How much would you say your relationship with Mike, is he passed out versus awake? Because it seems
how
like
is he as a father?
Most of the time, he's just gone.
Well,
and how is Asif Manvi cool being in that movie? Like, did anyone tell him what it was going to be beforehand?
Oh, Lev just swallowed his
cigar.
Don't
tell me that was you as well.
No, it was not. It was 100% not. That's the line I do not cross in my acting career.
Well, we commend you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have morals. So in terms of Mike being a father, just like his acting, he puts 110% into it. So he gives his kids piggyback rides and they have to time it. Because 5 minutes of a piggyback ride and he's down for the count.
It seems like he's just really in horrible physical shape. Just grossly physical, like horrible.
Well, he had to gain all that weight to play Fat Bastard and he never recovered.
Those were the last things he ever recorded, and years after Austin Powers.
That must have taken a real physical toll on your body, going between 600 pounds to 180 in 1 week periods.
It's why he's only in like 5 minutes of Inglourious Bastards.
I worked on that movie too, surprisingly enough.
Now that's a funny movie.
I really actually wanted to ask on that note. I was surprised to read in your credits that you did fluffing on Schindler's List. It yes, seems like a movie where really it's not much humor. So how was that?
Working on Schindler's List was perhaps my life's most difficult and yet most rewarding experience. And it's because I wore contacts that covered all color except for that girl's dress or jacket or whatever. Steven Spielberg said, I want every actor in this film to see the movie the way it's being shot. And so every crew member, everybody on that film had these contacts.
Even the pun fluffers.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is just me. I mean, it's a dying art. There used to be about five of us. Now it's just me. And so I would say working on that, and that really lightened it up a little bit, you know, because you couldn't see, you know, what was being filmed. So that, and, you know, Liam Neeson came up to me and he said, give me a pun. I can't get through this without a pun. So I thought, okay, well, the Torah, you know, I studied the Torah as a kid. And so I said, okay, so we'll do,
that is a book.
So God is walking down the road, down the street, and he and someone saying, God, we got a point, you know, there are fights going on. You know, there's fights going on between the Greeks and the Egyptians, and also the Egyptians are the big bad ones, you know. And so God says, oh my God, oh, where am I going to go?
Wait. Who is God referring to when he says, oh my God?
Well, have you ever say your own name?
Often.
You ever go, oh, Lev. Oh, Lev, how could you do such a thing?
Okay.
Just like that.
That's fair.
God says, proceed. God says, oh, where am I going to go? Who am I going to talk to? And the guy says, to Ra. To Ra. Talk to Ra.
All right, I admit I had pretty low hopes for that one, but it paid off.
Thank you. And Liam Neeson laughed about it, and then he performed that incredible film. Steven Spielberg, though, also great guy. We talked about Jaws a lot, because Jaws is my favorite movie.
What about Jaws catches your fancy? What about it makes it your favorite?
I like that the whole film takes place during the daytime.
Solid.
There are no night scenes in that. Because we used to film day for night all the time in old movies, and I thought it looked like complete dog shit. So the fact that they just said, we'll film a whole movie in the daytime.
I heard that Spielberg's endurance is unbelievable. Can you tell me what that was like?
So he was the complete opposite of Michael Myers, where Mike could work for maybe 35 minutes before I had to take over. Spielberg was a straight 72.
Did you ever take over Spielberg?
I did. I did. About the credits were actually directed by me. The opening and end credits were directed by me.
Wow.
That's why I took over.
Wow.
And even though those credits were directed by you, you couldn't get yourself listed in the credits?
I said, put me in the credits. I said, you got to put me in the credits. I, at least as an AD, assistant director, for those outside the industry. And they didn't put me in. I said, can you please, for the love of God, put me in this movie, at least with something? And they said, no, we're sorry, Mr. Spielberg. They called me Mr. Spielberg then. Because I had to wear the glasses and the wig and the little baseball cap and talk about E.T. all the fucking time. And so they said, look, Mr. Spielberg, we can't put your name in the movie. I said, my name is Stevenson. They said, we know, it's all for the act. Wow. Anyway, they couldn't put my name in the credits.
Wow. Why did they make you dress as Mr. Spielberg? Because right now it sounds almost as if you were on set and you tried to pass yourself as Mr. Spielberg and it kind of worked for the opening and end credits.
Yeah, well, Spielberg gets real pissy if he's not there for every single second of a film's production. He's there in pre, mid, and then post-production. We call it pre-pro and post. Pre-production, production, and then post-production.
All work in film.
I know. I'm sorry. It's
specifically a production company.
Exactly.
So pre-production, pre-Kennedy film?
What?
A pre-production, pre-Kennedy.
Yeah. This was Jaws.
Dorsch, I'm going to hang
Jaws
on.
Jaws before Kennedy?
It was around the same time. Dorsch, I'm going to hang on to this scotch for the rest of the podcast.
All right. I'll just drink this garlic butter sauce.
His
tongue in there, huh?
That's how Mike Myers used to eat. We used to ground up all his meals in big smoothies.
Why?
Because he would chug it. You know, we would say, Mike, your Sonic is here. And he'd grind it up, bag and all. He'd down it and then keep going with his lines. And God damn it, I respected him.
Someone in roller skates would skate onto set with a big smoothie full of fried chicken.
He
was living the dream, huh?
Those Sonic is known for really quick energy bursts. There's 3,000 calories. Boom.
What the hell is that?
That's... Oh, they're loading in the set for your movie.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, sorry. They just turned the hose on to fill up the indoor pool for the set of Titanic. I can move. I can move if you want me to. Let me move.
I thought the hose is fine.
No, you're good.
I feel like it was a bold but innovative choice to throw Titanic into the golden age of comedy.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone forgets about how funny those cats were that were on the Titanic. You know, they would make so many book jokes about the Great Gatsby. It will make your head spin.
And when you say they would make book jokes, were you right there on set?
No, but I have a book of their jokes. It's what got me into it.
Liv, I've got a question I've got to ask you, and yep. I've been trying to keep it back this whole time. Okay. For a man that's been in the movie industry for nearly 100 years, mm-hmm. why do you refuse to do any movie-related puns and just stick to the book ones? It seems like you would have almost infinite movie knowledge at this point.
I think... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to make you so emotional.
It's okay. In all honesty, I think films are the lowest form of art. And I think that books, the written word, is the greatest achievement that man or woman has ever, or child has ever achieved in this life, in this human existence. I disdain working on film so much that I tried to bring in the literary aspect of it to make it better. I mean, I have movie puns. If you want movie puns, I can make
maybe one or...
I'll admit we're running low on time. And I know you've got places to be. You mentioned before we started recording, you had a doctor's appointment.
Absolutely. Smoking cigars and then drinking about 2 glasses of Grey Goose every day is really taking an effect on my liver, kidneys, and all other vital organs. And there are no funny jokes about that.
You should see Mike Myers' doctor.
That doctor actually, yeah, I should. You know, I really should. Because that doctor helped Mike gain and then lose about 540 pounds. in about the span of 2 weeks, so I'll call him up.
So do you have a movie pun for us ready to go, or do you need a movie? Or...
I need a movie.
Okay. What about Titanic?
James Cameron is walking down the street. And he sees a bunch of hooligans, and they're running around. And he notices that some of them are wearing little caps. Some of them are wearing little outfits. You know, they're putting on a production. And he goes up to them. He says, "What are you all doing? You know how old people are. You know, oh, what are you all doing out there?" And they say, "Sorry, mister, we're putting on a play." And he says, "Oh, that's good. Can I see it?" And he watches it, and it's 5 minutes. And he says, "Ah, that's a pretty tight antic."
Well, that I'll be honest. That was the first pun I've laughed at. It almost seems like your movie pun is better than your book puns.
Well, I got more book puns. You just haven't heard the right book, right? Well,
Well, you already gave us your greatest hit.
Yeah, and that's the funniest joke I have. And so I don't know if Eastern European humor behind the Iron Curtain is different or what, but...
I'm sorry to do this at such a tense moment, but I really do have to go. I parked in a handicapped space, and I can see them towing my car. So I would like to... if I could just duck out real quick and see if I can negotiate with them. I'm sorry.
No worries. We'll just wrap up right here. Thank you so much for joining us this week, Lev.
Stevenson.
Mr. Stevenson, I'm sorry.
Of course.
You can catch A Tribute to the Golden Age of Comedy coming eventually. And yep. So shift yourself back into break. Oh, God damn it. One of these days we'll figure this ending out. All right, we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Adios.